Boeing reports a big 2007. 5 Eastern Orthodox Christmas celebrants are dead in a weekend accident in Alaska. And another tuberculosis patient has been flying on airliners. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, January 7th, 2008. Boeing has announced its official sales totals for 2007, and they're impressive. Total airliner sales finished at 1,413 net orders. Just in 2007, Boeing added 369 more sales to the growing order book for its new 787 Dreamliner. Even after the plane's first scheduled flight and entry into service were pushed back 6 months to accommodate supply chain issues, sales continued rolling in. As noted by Boeing Commercial Airplanes President and CEO Scott Carson, quote, "Our customers understand the issues, and market acceptance of our products and services has been nothing short of remarkable," unquote. This might be a subtle shot at the desertions by some original customers of the Airbus A380 and A350 after they suffered developmental delays. The Dreamliner is now scheduled to make its first flight by mid-year and see its first customer delivery by year's end. Boeing was also able to embarrass the pundits who had predicted the updated 737 series was getting too long in the tooth to sell effectively anymore. 2007 saw sales of another 846 of the latest iterations of the narrow-body twin, originally introduced in 1965, surpassing 2006's 729 orders to set a new annual record for sales of the type. Boeing notes on its website, quote, "The 737 family has won orders for more than 6,000 airplanes, which is more airplanes than the Boeing company's biggest competitor has won for its entire product line since it began business," unquote. If you missed it, that was a slightly less subtle shot at Airbus. Airbus will release its own 2007 totals on January 16th, and EADS CEO Louis Gallois is known for his own entertaining spin on competition in his industry. We'll keep you posted. Eastern Orthodox Christmas was celebrated by Russians on Sunday, but it was a somber occasion for some residents of Kodiak and Homer, Alaska. The Anchorage Daily News reports a chartered Piper PA-31 Navajo chieftain carrying a pilot and 9 Russian Old Believers to a holiday celebration in Homer crashed during an attempt to return to Kodiak Airport after takeoff on Saturday afternoon. The plane went down in icy harbor waters near the airport. The pilot and 5 passengers died, while 4 survivors were rescued by a nearby seaplane pilot who came to their aid after following the unfolding drama on his comm radio. NTSB and an engineer from Piper are reportedly on scene. A survivor told investigators on Sunday that the door to a nose baggage compartment popped open just before the crash. The aerodynamic implications are being examined, but NTSB investigator Clint Johnson told the paper, quote, "This does not signal an end to our investigation of the crash by any means," unquote. The pilot, 50-year-old Robin Sterrett, was employed by Servant Air, based at Kodiak. Spokesman Ted Panamariov described the former Coast Guard helicopter pilot as, quote, "very humble, very caring, very detail-oriented, very precise in the way he did things. He was an excellent family man, excellent co-worker," unquote. Stop me if you've heard this one before. An airline passenger on an international flight is feared to have contaminated 44 fellow passengers with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis after disregarding a diagnosis and flying anyway. Deja vu, perhaps, but this time it's a 30-year-old woman from India. Officials at the U.S. Centers for Disease Control say she flew from New Delhi to Chicago on American Airlines Flight 293 on December 13th, then on to California aboard a domestic flight. Reuters reports that unlike the symptom-free Atlanta lawyer who caused a similar ruckus last year, the Indian woman had sought treatment after suffering fever, chest pain, and coughing up blood. CDC officials say anyone seated within 2 rows of the woman and crew members on both flights should get checkups immediately, with follow-ups in 8 to 10 weeks. Police sources in Toronto tell the CanWest News Service a 20-year-old man who ran past security at Pearson International faces multiple criminal charges, but may suffer from mental illness. Peel Regional Police say the man ran past a screening checkpoint in Terminal 1 about 9 a.m. Friday morning and made his way onto an Air Canada plane. After a verbal confrontation with the pilot, he then reportedly ran back toward pursuing security officers and was arrested. Police say it was not clear whether the man had a ticket for any flight. Up next on ANN, NASA says we're looking at least January 24th, for the launch of the shuttle Atlantis. Is schedule pressure at NASA increasing risks? And U.S. Airways fights a lawsuit by six Muslim imams. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply canal tips composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 7th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. NASA has announced the shuttle Atlantis will not fly until at least January 24th, and more likely sometime in February. As ANN reported, Atlantis was scheduled to lift off in early December on the latest construction mission to the International Space Station, but a malfunction in two of the four engine cutoff sensors inside the external fuel tank scrubbed that launch, and another one attempted 4 days later. Technicians traced the problem to a faulty feed-through connector, which connects the tank's internal sensors to the shuttle's computers, and the current plan is to replace the connector, but NASA acknowledges the design of the connector is suspect, which means a simple replacement is not guaranteed to solve the problem. One thing for sure is that the delay of the Atlantis launch will force moving the scheduled February 14th launch of Endeavour. The agency requires at least 5 weeks between shuttle launches. The deadline for the completion of the shuttle program, mandated by the White House, is September 30th, 2010, and there are 13 missions yet to be completed. That schedule pressure is raising concerns that NASA may have to cut corners in its rush to get all those missions in. The agency wants to launch six missions this year. That would be twice as many as last year, and now Atlantis will probably not get the first one off until next month. William H. Gerstenmaier has been with the shuttle program since the beginning and now serves as NASA's Chief of Space Operations. He told the Washington Post that while the shuttles are now 27 years old, they're actually safer than ever due to all the accumulated knowledge about how to fly them. Quote, "The schedule we've made is very achievable in the big scheme of things. That is, unless we get some unforeseen problems," unquote. Duke University professor and former NASA historian Alex Rowland counters, quote, "This pressure feels so familiar. It was the same before the Challenger and Columbia disasters. This push to do more with a spaceship that is inherently unpredictable because it is so complex," unquote. John Logsdon, a former member of the panel which investigated the Columbia disaster in 2003, is now a space policy analyst at George Washington University. He tells the Post another shuttle failure would likely suspend the manned space program in the U.S. for years and must therefore be avoided at all costs. Officials with U.S. Airways and Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport want a jury trial in a civil rights lawsuit filed by six Muslim imams removed from a flight after reports of suspicious behavior in November of 2006. The six were returning home from an Islamic clerics conference. Passengers and crew members expressed concern when the men allegedly asked for seatbelt extensions they didn't need, refused to take their assigned seats, spoke critically of the war in Iraq and President Bush, and discussed Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. The Washington Times reports the airline and the Minneapolis Airports Commission, in addition to asking for a jury trial in the imams' discrimination lawsuit, also want immunity for those who ask the imams to be removed from the flight, citing a John Doe law passed by Congress last year that protects those who report persons acting suspiciously to authorities. Airports Commission spokesman Patrick Hogan asserts, quote, "We believe the process worked as it should to protect the traveling public," unquote. The imams made over 200 individual complaints in their suit, claiming police officers were, quote, "solely motivated by their intent to discriminate against the imams based on their race, color, religion, ethnicity," unquote. U.S. District Judge Anne Montgomery has not ruled whether she will hear the case with a jury present. In November, she denied motions to dismiss the suit. If you're booked on an American Airlines transcontinental flight this year, you might take some comfort in knowing the jet you'll be flying could be equipped with a system to thwart attacks from shoulder-fired missiles. The Department of Homeland Security signed a $29 million contract with BAE Systems on December 21st, calling for tests to be conducted with domestic aircraft equipped with a laser-based JEDI defense system. BAE is working with American to outfit three of its Boeing 767-200s, used on transcontinental flights between New York and Los Angeles, with JEDI, which is designed to jam the guidance systems of man-portable air defense systems, or MANPADs. The test program is slated to begin in March or April, and will mark the first time the countermeasure system will be tested on aircraft carrying passengers. Previous tests have been conducted using systems mounted on cargo planes and empty test aircraft. JEDI would cost up to $1 million per plane to implement, not counting maintenance costs, which are unknown. American agreed to participate in the program, but remains philosophically opposed to anti-missile technology on commercial aircraft. Spokesman John Hotard notes, quote, "When you look at the cost-benefit, it would be an extremely expensive proposition, and in the end, is it really going to work?" Unquote. Still ahead, South Korea loses a communications satellite. ATA names Steenland chairman of the board. And violence in Kenya grounds missionary flights. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, January 7th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. News agencies throughout Asia are reporting that the South Korean government has confirmed a loss of contact with its first multipurpose communications satellite. An official with the Korea Aerospace Research Institute said, quote, "Our efforts to restore communication with the Arirang-1 satellite have been unsuccessful," unquote. Arirang-1 was launched on December 21st of 1999, to take high-resolution photos of the Earth's surface. A spokesman for the Institute said an equipment failure or misalignment of solar panels leading to drained batteries are probable causes of the loss of the uplink on December 30th. South Korea has deployed only three commercial communication satellites since 1995 and just launched its first military communication satellite in 2006. The Air Transport Association of America announced on Friday the election of Northwest Airlines President and CEO Douglas Steenland to a two-year term as chairman of the ATA Board of Directors. Steenland replaces outgoing board chairman Gerard Arpey of American Airlines. He'll work with ATA President and CEO James May on industry issues, including pushing the Federal Aviation Administration to upgrade air traffic control to increase capacity. May thanked Arpey and added, quote, "We look forward to Doug's leadership in continuing to advance the public's interest in a robust, dynamically structured aviation system," unquote. Steenland has served as president of Northwest since April of 2001 and added CEO stripes in 2004. Politically triggered violence, which has rocked Kenya for a week and claimed more than 300 lives, caused Mission Aviation Fellowship Thursday to suspend all its flights in the country. The ministry told the Christian Post it had received nonstop requests for help from people desperate to flee deadly clashes between police and anti-government protesters. The violence exploded after a disputed December 27th presidential election in which opposition leader Raila Odinga accused President Mwai Kibaki of rigging the vote to ensure his re-election. The Kenyan Red Cross reports at least 70,000 people have been displaced by violence in western Kenya, including Christian missionaries who are no longer safe in their homes. The ministry said it expected to resume flights today. And finally, Cessna responded to criticism over its decision to outsource production of its light sport aircraft, the 162 Skycatcher, to China, by creating a blog to explain in detail the reasons for its decision. The initial posting on December 7th by VP of Marketing Tom Aniello acknowledges the debate many of us have heard around pilot lounges and aviation events. Quote, "Much of the feedback we heard was emotionally charged. However, a great many remarks appeared to be based on incomplete or inaccurate information. We thought you might appreciate some additional insight into Cessna's business decision," unquote. The rest of the post lays out the 50-plus year track record of Shenyang Aircraft Company in producing both complete aircraft and also components for companies including Boeing, Airbus, and Bombardier, and discusses at length the economic forces at work in today's global economy. And Aniello closes with assurances that the Skycatcher will truly be a Cessna, fully backed by Cessna. A month later, most of the 193 responses have been from people who aren't buying the company's arguments and say they'll never buy a plane made in China. For those of us old enough to remember, this is deja vu. I seem to recall talk in the early 1970s about how Americans would never buy cars made in Japan. Oops. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, in my weekly chat with CFI Bob Miller, find out why the basic altimeter becomes the primary focus of your scan during an IFR approach, and why, even during landing, you need to have your airport's departure chart handy. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.